If you are a marketing enthusiast and you wish to learn the tricks up the sleeves of seasoned marketeers, you are at the right place. I am your host, Nishant Goyal, and this is the Marketing Chakravyuh podcast, where I invite accomplished marketeers from around the world and pick on their brain, asking questions that would help you understand the mystery of marketing and grow yourself to heights. Whether you are a student, entrepreneur, or a marketer yourself, this is where you can learn the untold secrets of marketing from the people you admire and love. Today we have with us the founder and chief growth officer of growthclub.org, Adi Suja. He is also the head of content marketing at Imagine Growth Institute and head of growth at ecommerceplatform.com and unblog.net. He also has worked with BAMF Media, one of the first LinkedIn growth marketing companies in the world, and helped them grow their blog readership with stellar content on LinkedIn growth hacking. So let's jump into the conversation with Adi.
First of all, I came to know that you use your mother's name as your last name.
Okay, so it's kind of like a very vulnerable and personal experience. But the truth is that there was a very, you could say, a bad period in my life. It started out when I was kicked out of a company I co-founded. So immediately after I quit my first job, which was, I was a content marketer in a Canadian marketing consultancy, an online marketing consultancy called TechWise. So I quit the company with the goal of freelancing, and I'm slowly starting my own blog online on content marketing. And 1 month after I quit the job, my then manager in my first job also quit the job, because he gained inspiration from the fact that I quit my job without a backup. And we eventually started a company together. So the name of the company was Growth Sapiens. And 1 month down the line, like, we set up an office in Cochin, which is in South India. We had a few clients, and we started hiring. We hired a first employee. And then shit in the ceiling, right? It's done that decisions like, say, starting the company should be taken after you think a lot about it and work with, like, say, who would be a co-founder for a few months and build that rapport, and only then you should make some decisions. But I rushed into it. It was my fault entirely. And 1 month down the line, shit hit the ceiling, and it resulted in a huge ego clash between the founders, and we eventually split. Right? So more to say, I was kicked out of the company. So I was super depressed. I had no idea what to do, because by then I had invested, like, say, a lot of my time for a few months into building that company, into setting up the office and stuff like that. And I called my dad and I told him, like, say, okay, I'm coming back home. My dad said, okay. I jumped on a bus and I got back home. And over the next few days, I really didn't have the guts to tell my mom that this thing had happened. Even, like, to inaugurate the office, the new office that we set up. It was a swanky office, like 3,000 square foot office. And to inaugurate the office, I invited my parents to Cochin to inaugurate the office, right? And so they had this belief that I was going to start something great, and they had a lot of expectations. But I didn't have the guts to tell her that I had split with them and that I was kicked out of that company. And eventually, I told her, and she was, like, totally chill about it. She told me, like, it's okay, we'll figure things out. I was not concerned, don't worry, and stuff like that. So until that day, I had thought that she would take it in a different light, in a different way. And that day I thought, okay, this woman is my strength. I have to do something to kind of let people know that she's my strength, you know? So that day I changed my online persona to Adi Suja. And from then on, whatever I do online, I do it under that persona, Adi Suja. So that's the story behind it.
Wow. And with that, Adi, when did you get into marketing? What made you get into marketing?
Aha. Okay, that's another story right there. So, okay, the brutal truth about it. Okay, so I am all in for authenticity and talking stuff like they are. So I was pursuing my engineering degree, and I had come home for the weekend. So my engineering college is like, I don't know, about 200 miles from here, from my home. And I'd come back to my hometown for the weekend, and I was browsing for porn online. This is the truth about it. Okay, so just like any teenager at that time, I was browsing online, and I came across some. This is a crappy website that talked about how to be a millionaire online, right? And I just saw like the video of that guy. Of he portrayed himself like an online entrepreneur. So I had little idea what online marketing was. This was about, I think it was about 8 or 9 years back. And he had like a swanky mansion, some swanky fast cars, and he showed them all in the video. So it kind of instilled the belief that I could start an online business, right? And what he did was he was selling a course. So all this video that I saw with the swanky mansions and swanky cars was actually the sales video on his landing page. And he was selling a course that taught how to be a marketer online. So the course costed about $150, if I remember correctly. But we're students having like a meager budget in India, right? And my monthly budget was around 4,000 to 5,000 rupees back then. And I didn't have the money to like say buy a 150, yeah, about $150, 150 USD course. So what I did was I started looking for ways to make this money. Right, so I started reading about SEO. I did a bunch of SEO stuff. I started reading about like say surveys and how to make like say money using surveys, building websites, affiliate websites, but none of them worked, right? And eventually I landed on this website called I think it's called constant-content.com. So this is a website. It's kind of acts like a content marketplace. You can create content and upload content on that website, and if anybody comes and sees the content and they like it, they can purchase that piece of content. So I started uploading articles, like say every day after coming from college, coming to my hostel. I used to sit in a dingy old hostel room, and using an old Acer laptop, I used to like type out articles and upload them to this website, right? I didn't like say it was just an experiment. I didn't know if I could make money from there, because most of the ways to make money online that I tried before or experimented with before all failed. And eventually, one article sold. That article was sold for like $9. So one day I was coming back from college and I got a message in my phone saying, okay, one article has been sold for $9. See, $9 isn't much money, but that was like, say, a signal that this shit works, that you can make money online, right? And from then on, like, say, every single day I used to come back from college and I used to, like, say, sit and write articles and upload them on Constant Content. I think I made around at least $1,000 just from like say uploading articles on that website. And eventually I purchased the course. The course turned out to be a scam. It didn't add any value. I think the first time I had success was actually pursuing copywriting. Interestingly, like I wanted to be an online marketer and I started doing copywriting, freelance copywriting online. And eventually that became my first business.
Wow. So you didn't directly learn from the course, but you also learned in the process of getting.
Exactly. Exactly.
That is the real learning, learning with a goal and you search different ways of reaching the goal.
Yeah, but it was my first experience of like online entrepreneurship.
And getting scammed.
Yeah, true. But the thing is, back then, like, say, even though there were online entrepreneurs all over the world, this field wasn't very famous in India back at that time. You know, there weren't any online entrepreneurs that I knew of, at least. And it was only like, say, after I got started and like, say, started hearing about people like Neil Patel or Ryan Stewart or Brian Lee, like, say, only after I got into actually doing this stuff. So it is interesting to like see the industry progress over the past decade.
Wow. Where do you think industry will go now?
When people talk about things like AI and augmented reality and stuff like that, we just shrug it off, thinking that this is something that is to happen in the future, right? But if something like say any technological growth has shown us, it's that the early adopters will always win, right? So I can tell you that there is going to be a lot of AI usage in marketing, particularly in the future. There is going to be a lot of augmented reality use in like content creation and stuff like that. We're talking about videos right now, but there's a lot of first movers in the marketing industry that are seeing that, okay, augmented reality is the future and mixed reality is the future. So we need to focus on that and are working towards that. So I think if you ask me like say about what to expect in the future, I would definitely say augmented reality and artificial intelligence are two trends that will happen. It's not something that is going to happen. It's already started happening.
Okay, and do you think these can take over marketing and maybe impact how marketing will be? It won't be the
yes,
same as it is.
Definitely. Like say, not just marketing, like say we've already seen like say several breakthrough disruptive startups coming up in the AI space that have specific like that are solving specific pain points in like marketing. I'll give you an example. There are startups that do AI-based web designing. So based on the interest of users who are coming onto your website, these tools, these AI tools can give them a customized view of the web page. And this is already happening.
Wow.
So I think there's a lot of disruptive solutions that are coming out in the AI space. It's definitely something to look forward to.
Yeah, and that is with website building. Even with content, you have GPT-3.
Yeah.
With videos, you have can really just make any image move the way you want. And it will feel that the image is speaking your script and even sound
yes.
like it.
Yes. Actually, somebody sent me an example to this. I think it was one of our clients and he suggested that you should try using this.
Yeah. It was famous. Students and kids around were using it for fun, making images of even Mona Lisa speak a song in very particular voice. So, like, yeah, you could give samples of voice and text. Now the voice will speak whatever is in the sample. So this was very, it was even mentioned that this could be used to sabotage or frame anyone wrongly.
Deepfake can be used for like say a lot of stuff, but I feel there's a lot of interesting solutions that are coming in the marketing field as well.
With that, now since the applications and the tools are so strong that they can easily be used for a wrong purpose, what do you think how the ethical responsibilities of the organizations will change in near future, especially with AI in marketing? Now, since you are an engineer, this question is particularly from that, an engineer in marketing.
See, imagine when the first automobile was created, right? They didn't have laws about this kind of stuff. The same trend happened when self-driving vehicles came into the picture, right? They didn't have laws about it then, but later they created laws for it. So I think it's impossible to like say talk about law creation and having policies on social media platforms specific to AI-related or augmented reality stuff. I think it'll just come into the picture only when this is being adopted by a number of users. So just like say now there are laws about electric cars and self-driving cars. In the future, there'll be laws for like say AI-generated videos and AI-generated content and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And back to the marketing direction. So you got into copywriting.
True.
Did you learn it by yourself or you took another course for it that actually worked?
I have taken a number of courses on copywriting. There's been a lot of people I learned from. I don't consider myself to be an expert, but yeah, I think when you call yourself a growth marketer, the truth is you're not an expert at everything in marketing, right? When we consider online marketing, there's like so different kinds of skills. There's copywriting, there's search engine optimization, there's content writing, which is different from copywriting. Then there's advertising, then there's design. Design falls into, let's say, graphic design or web design. It's a bit different. Then we have presentation skills, sales. There's a lot of different areas within marketing. And a growth marketer is somebody who is, I term it as jack of all trades, but master at one. So It's called a T skill. So it's kind of like in the shape of a T. So the head of the T is are all the skills, are the range of the skills that you're okay at, right? And the leg of the T is the one skill that you're really good at. So when I call myself a growth marketer, I think my leg skill is copywriting. And one of the reasons is because, well, I like writing. And it's one of those skills that naturally got built in me through my previous careers, right? So I started out with the copywriting business. Then I joined a marketing consultancy as a content marketer. So obviously, I was doing a lot of copywriting there. And then after that, I quit and joined the company. And even there, there was a lot of copywriting involved. Then we started a growth marketing company, and we used to generate leads via LinkedIn, and that took, again, a lot of copywriting work. So, yeah, I would say it's a combination of a lot of effort I put in to learn it. A lot of mentors, like, say, Brian Dean, Ryan Stewart, Devendra Thora, there's a lot of people I learned from. And I think the only paid course that I took that really taught me a bit about copywriting is Brian D's SEO That Works. That was a really good course about SEO, but he also talks about copywriting in that. But apart from that, I think it's mostly like, say, hours and hours and hours of work and practice trying to craft good copy that kind of instill that copywriting skill in.
Okay, so basically hours and hours of failure that gives you success now.
True.
So after getting into copywriting and starting an organization, where did you go from that? Like, you got into LinkedIn right after, or there was some transition that made you get to it?
Yes. So I had literally zero sales experience when we started, when I started the company, when I started GrowthTix. So the first name of Growth Club was GrowthTix. We just rebranded in 2020. I think it was March or April in 2020 to Growth Club, right? The first name of the company was GrowthTix. So when I started GrowthTix, I had literally zero sales experience. And I literally didn't know like how to generate leads. We had some, like, say, clients that had been with me from the time since I was a freelancer. The name of the client is e-commerce platforms. So I started out with them as a content writer. I was creating content for their blog and stuff. Then I started doing SEO for them. Then I became the head of growth of the company. So they joined with me as we, like, say, started Growth Club or GrowthTix. And we were, like, say, I had a team. I started slowly hiring people and started working with them. So they were my first client. But I didn't know how to generate leads for my business. That was the biggest challenge, right? So I thought I'd figure it out. But the truth is, month after month, it was just a huge risk to continue with one single client, right? And eventually, I came across, like, say, a PDF online, which is just an ebook that talked about how publishing content on LinkedIn, publishing stories on LinkedIn could generate leads for my business. And what I did was I set up a form on my website, on my GrowthTix website, where people could reach out to me for a free consultation, right? And I added a link to that form in my LinkedIn profile. And I shared a few stories on LinkedIn. I think I shared about 10 of them. And I forgot about it, right? I forgot about this form and the inquiries. And, like, say, the inquiries weren't coming into my email. It was going into some Google Sheet. And four months after that, I was going through my Google Drive, checking out some old files, and I came across the sheet where the inquiries were coming in. And there were like 40 leads in that sheet. And, like, say, the first moment I saw it, I was like, shit, this LinkedIn works, awesome. And then, like, say, slowly the realization dawned on me that I hadn't followed up with any of these leads for months, right? I lost all of those leads. I think I followed up with one of them, and one of them later became a client later on. But that was almost, I think it was the projected value of all those leads were about $40,000. We lost all of those leads. And I was like, first I realized that, okay, LinkedIn works. And then I realized, okay, shit, I lost all of those leads. I suck. And then I thought, okay, maybe if I continue to publish on LinkedIn, it's going to work out for me. And then we started creating content on LinkedIn. Then later on, we rolled a LinkedIn marketing as a service. And eventually we pivoted to being a LinkedIn focused marketing agency. So yeah, it's been a journey, but I think the main realization is that from that point that I understood that LinkedIn marketing works, after I saw that Google Sheet, it was just a matter of time until I realized that it was a very good lead acquisition channel for our business. Especially if it's a business in the B2B space, LinkedIn is huge right now. So I think it was just a matter of time till we became a LinkedIn agency. As opposed to, like, say, having, I only regret not making that decision sooner than having it done later.
Okay. Which year was it?
It was last year that we pivoted to being a LinkedIn marketing agency. I mean, we had LinkedIn clients even before that, but it was then that we made a decision, okay, let's stop all the other crap we're doing. Let's just focus on this.
Okay. And when did you create the Google form?
Oh, that was in December 2018, I think.
Okay, and one more question that is directly related. Mm-hmm. There were 40 leads. So how did you, you know, project the value that, okay, these 40 leads are worth approximately $40,000?
So, okay. So all companies, like, say, have a customer lifetime value or CLV, right? It's for a service company that has usually has clients on average that stay with them for like 10 months or like 1 year. It'll be the monthly retail or the monthly cost of working with them times 12, right? So based on our conversion rates at that time, I think I calculated the CLV of all the number of clients that we potentially could have converted from those leads, and that was worth at least 40,000 USD.
Okay.
I think there's around 2 or 3 clients that we could realistically convert from them. Some of them just spam leads, but I think 2 or 3 clients that we could have realistically converted from them, and that was worth 40,000 USD at least.
Okay, and you still managed to convert one client?
Yeah, so one of them was a travel client. It wasn't actually a travel client, but they were developing a travel. They were a venture company based out of the Netherlands that was trying to create a travel platform dedicated to Muslims. So Muslims have these unique challenges when it comes to traveling. The problem is that they can only stay at halal places. So they cannot stay at hotels that are attached to bars or pubs. Or they cannot stay at hotels that, they cannot eat at restaurants that serve pork, for example. It has to be halal for them, right? It's against their religious beliefs and stuff like that. So they have this unique challenge. So they were trying to create a mobile app, just like Make My Trip or Redbus, that were for like Muslim travel enthusiasts that focused only on halal hotels and halal restaurants. So they were trying to build this application and they had a lot of challenges with data engineering. So I think the first thing that we helped them most was data engineering.
After that, how did you get into the funnels? When did you realize about funnels? You know, learned about it, came to know about it.
Okay, so the truth about it is people say like growth hacking is all about like say fancy marketing automation, but the truth is growth hacking is simply experimentation, right? And one of the things that I learned, I can't really say very early on, it was actually quite late, I should have learned it sooner, is that there is a limit to which you can do things manually, right? There's a limit to which you can cold email people, or there is a limit to which you can reach out to your prospects one by one, try to engage your prospects one by one. And it can either be like, say, the ads that you're running or the cold emailing that you're doing, any sort of marketing activity that you do both. And the sooner that you bring marketing automation into it, the sooner that you can save more of your time and focus actually on things that make most impact in your business, right? And when we talk about funnels, funnels are basically just marketing automation. It's just positioning your sales and your marketing channels in such a way that it happens systematically and automatically. So an example of a simple funnel would be adding a form in your LinkedIn profile to have a free consultation with you. And so that prospects can like say, click on the form, fill the form, and then immediately after the form, they will be led to a Calendly page where they can book a call. And that call will be booked in the calendar of one of your sales consultants or solutions consultants, so that they can hop on a call and convert it. At the same time, this lead that comes in will be tracked in your CRM. They'll be added to your email newsletter list so that you can continuously nurture them and stuff like that. Now imagine the amount of time it would take, like say, do this manually. Every single time somebody on your team has to have a checklist to like do all of these things one by one. And with the help of like say a simple few softwares and some automations, you can completely automate this funnel process so that you can focus on like more important things like content creation and getting more people into this funnel and converting more of them.
So what made you get your company revolve around funnels more than other stuff? As you are also teaching funnels right now, a part of your course, what made you give so much emphasis on funnels?
See, the thing is, it's said that when you're an agency owner, you focus on, okay, it's not said, but when you're an agency owner, you focus on the pain points that you are facing, right? And you try to solve those pain points for your clients, right? So that's a natural inclination that I've had from right from the start. So one of the biggest pain points that we had was I couldn't automate a lot of the stuff at the start, right? When we were doing LinkedIn marketing at the start, we didn't have all of these fancy funnels set up at the start when we did LinkedIn marketing. But later on, when I understood that, okay, I'm happy to do all of these tasks manually and it's taking up a lot of my time, let me focus on automating this. And once I automated it, I saw that that pain point was solved, and I eventually started doing that for clients or teaching it in my courses so that clients could, all of like say the people who knew me, who bought courses from me or like say work with me could gain that value out of it, right? So it was more about how funnels solve the problem for me learning from that, and then executing it for clients.
Okay, so you felt that your clients also have the same problem and they could really benefit from funnels.
Yeah, let's be honest, like saying all of us have the same problem. If we are able to save time for simple automations, then we definitely need to work it.
Yeah, that's true. Some say time is money, but time is more than money because...
So time, often like say we have this debate about like say what your time is worth. The truth is you can like say set an hourly rate for your consulting services or whatever services you have. But the truth is time is the only resource that you have. You don't have, money is just a virtual thing that we've created, that humans have created. Time is the only resource we have. We spend time to create money and then we focus on spending that money to like save time. It's ridiculous, right? So I would say like say always focus on improving like say the value of your time. A simple example would be like say, okay, you're starting to generate clients for your business and you have a lot of marketing initiatives that you're doing. Eventually you'll begin to understand that you can put together a process to automate most of these or create funnels to automate most of these. And after you do that, you can just hire people or put together a funnel and run ads or whatever to kind of automate it so that your time is completely saved from it. Now you can focus your time on creating more revenue generating opportunities and increase the value of your time even more, right? I think I've been in constant battle for this for like, say, I don't know, the past 3 years.
Wow. That's a, you know, great battle to be in because at the end, you'll always come out better and more time efficient.
True.
Okay. So Adi, as we wrap this up, what would you like to share with the audience or specifically for the students to get into marketing or grow themselves or anything really in their journey up ahead?
I might sound like a 50-year-old uncle right now, but the truth is, as I mentioned earlier, it's you learn about like these different lessons in your life that as you become older and you learn about more things, you begin to understand that they meant something, right? So especially for students, like say, I was like say complete wacko during college sports. Like I never had discipline. I used to eat at crazy times. I never like say slept for 8 hours at a time together. I used to sleep in the afternoons. I never had a proper schedule or discipline in my life. But later on, like even now, I don't think I have a proper discipline in my life, but I'm beginning to realize the importance of these kind of things, right? So it's always about understanding the base elements, the base things that you need in your life to actually achieve to where you want to be. We look at people like Elon Musk, and we look at people like Bill Gates and Satya Nadella, and we think Sundar Pichai and people like that, and we think, okay, they have a hotshot degree from Wharton or some US college. They have an IIT degree and they slowly climbed up the corporate ladder and stuff like that. But we don't see the base elements behind which they establish their life. They built their life or their career. And these base elements are not like, say, degrees or like fancy degrees from IITs or like what they learned. These are simple things like waking up in the morning, exercise, eating food on time, like very, very simple things, right? So, and this is very evident, like saying there are books about this, Efficient Habits of Successful Entrepreneurs. There are books like that. There are interviews on YouTube about Satya Nadella, so Sundar Pichai's daily routines, about Elon Musk's daily routines and stuff like that. So check out those videos, try to get an understanding of like, say, how their life is super disciplined. Like we look at Dwayne Johnson, we see muscles, right? The truth is, successful people look at Dwayne Johnson and they see a person who wakes up 4 a.m. every single day and works out like he does enough workout in a single day than we do more workout than we do in like in a month. Right? And he does it before by 6 a.m. by the time his kids wake up. And it's that discipline that is actually getting them to success. It's a discipline that's a foundation on the basis of which they're building their life. And this is not just true for like movie stars, like big hotshot entrepreneurs. It's also truthful for the successful people that you see around you that don't have a personal brand on LinkedIn, that don't have like a huge following on Instagram or Facebook. Like the people, even the successful people that you see around you who are not very famous, they have like say very good discipline built into their lives. And this is not a trend, or this is not like say one or two entrepreneurs. Every single one of them will have these elements in their life. This is because it is these elements that get them to success. This is not an eventuality, or this is not a chance happening that leads them to success. You need these things in your life. And it's these things that enable you to develop yourself personally. Like when I say I want to read a book every day, I want to read for 10 minutes every day. If I want to read for 10 minutes every day, I have to wake up on time. I have to have food on time. I have to structure my work so that I can free that much time from my schedule every single day. And you won't have that without discipline, right? So the first thing that, again, I'm going to sound like a 50-year-old uncle here, but the first thing that you need to get in your life in order is discipline, right? The second thing is the way you start your day. I suck at this, to be honest, because I don't do my morning rituals on many days. But the truth is, the way you start your day has a very important effect on, like, say, your productivity and your balance and your happiness throughout the day. So always try to wake up early. Again, something like an uncle over here, but the truth is, it's in the early hours of your day that you can focus on, that you can have actual focus, right? Many of these factors are told in Hinduism, like Brahma Muhurtam and stuff like that, that you need to like say wake up in the morning at 3 a.m. and that is a time of intense focus and stuff like that. I used to ridicule them when I was a child, but the truth is, shit does work. And you need to like say focus on waking up early and trying to get like say focus on your most important goals at the start of the day. Then there are rituals, morning rituals, I would definitely recommend. See, most of these things, it's interesting because most of these, you asked me a question about how to get into marketing and be a successful marketer, but most of these things have zero relatedly to marketing. It's more about structuring your life in such a way so that you can actually learn better and do stuff better, right?
Thank you, Adi. Thanks a lot for your time and your wisdom and sharing all the learnings and experiences out here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So that was our conversation. Hope you found it helpful. Tell us your most useful learning from this episode and I will give you a free entry into our exclusive merchandise giveaway. Oh, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button and tell your friends how much you love this podcast. See you in the next episode. This was Marketing Chakraview Podcast and I am Nishant Goyal signing out.